Well, I guess we've got no more people joining us. We might as well get started rather than keeping the rest of us waiting. So happy to kick off with the roll call and apologies and get moving with the call.
Dora, shall I start?
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. So from the CCNSO we have Becky Burr, Hiro Hotta, Annabeth Lange, Catherine Reynolds, Ron Sherwood, Paul Schindler, Martin Simon. From GAC we have Elisa Lindeberg. From the GNSO we have Carlos Aguirre, Ilya Bazlyankov, and Heather Forrest. From At Large we have Eduardo Diaz and Cheryl Langdonor. From staff we have Bart Boswinkel, Fahir Esmat, Christina Nordström, and Gabriella Chizik. And apologies from Joke Bracken, Mandy Carver, Henry Chan, Keith Davidson, Sokol Hakshu, and Marika Koenigsen. Can I just ask who just joined?
Irmgarda from UNESCO.
Oh, hello. So we have Irmgarda Kasinskaya for the Berg as well.
That's yes, awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, welcome. And that's it, Paul.
Oh, okay, yes, okay, thank you. I just wanted to mention that we've also got Japak Hus on the call. He's ICANN's appointed member to the ISO 3166MA. He's going to assist us with the obvious skills and experiences he's got with the ISO, which could come in particularly in handy for this for the purposes of this study group. So if everyone's happy, Yap's on the call. Now, all right, now, what do I have to do to get this presentation going?
Christina, can you load up the PowerPoint?
Perfect. Well, as you can see, the agenda for today's call, and we've already covered off on the first point, was the roll call and apologies. And then I wanted to get into... Sorry, who's joined us?
Sorry, Chris Chaplow from BC joining.
Chris Chaplow. Okay, hi, thank
Chris.
You, that's noted.
Thanks.
Apologies,
and,
mate.
I just wanted to work through today, again, the current status of the study group and just touch on our work plan and schedule. The targets that we're working towards so that we all have a common understanding as we're working towards Costa Rica and then ultimately our goals towards the end of the year, and then spend quite a bit of time on the topology that we've talked about developing, the one that Bart had developed a straw man for. Sorry, who's joined us?
Hi, this is Yap.
Ah, there you are.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Yap, I think I introduced you to the study group in absentia, but...
Yeah, you heard a little bit via Adobe, but yes, I think it was correct.
Well, thank you. I'm glad that you could join us and help and assist in the work of the study group. Just covering through on the agenda again, I just want to spend quite a bit of time on the topology, which, as I said, we'd that Bart had developed a straw man proposal earlier in the year. We had last year, we then shared that with UNESCO. Some commentary was received from them. We then also received a couple of other comments on it, and this is the element of our work that we need to progress quite considerably before we can then. Request UNESCO go out to member states. It's the key element of our work that will help us moving forward. Then we move on to specifically the UNESCO survey, what it would be, what it would encompass, how it would be undertaken, the methodology for it, and the sort of timings that we would need for it. That pretty much covers, it says next steps, but beyond that, they really are the next two or three steps that we need to work through, and I'm quite happy to discuss any other business at the end of the call. Now, this largely is a cut and paste from the presentation that I gave in Dakar, which was the back of a napkin timeline work plan schedule, which is not necessarily something we need to religiously adhere to, aside from the delivery of a final report by the end of 2012. Obviously, that timeline is set around a reasonable estimation of when we might be expecting a second round of new GTLDs. This is a crystal ball-gazing exercise. The study group was never established to provide input or commentary for the first round of the new GTLD process, obviously. But if one were to assume that everything went perfectly smoothly and the first round went through, the best one could expect is a second round early in 2013. There are many possible delays, many quite reasonable delays that people may expect in the second round, but we must aim for delivering some sort of product to preempt that second round so that it can inform that process by the end of this year. Therefore, everything before that on this slide is indicative, starting from one of the first elements of the group's work, which was to do a policy overview of what has been and the way that country and territory names have been handled in ICANN processes previously. A summary of that's already been developed and shared with the group. It's available on the Confluence page. And then the next step is the work that we're getting onto now, developing the scope of the topology, which I mentioned previously. It's something that we need to not necessarily finalise before, but make significant advancements of before the Costa Rica meeting. Then UNESCO could go away and do some work on the topology, which is going out to their member states and consulting with them, and then us at the same time discussing some of the issues that are identified out of that. What I'd like to raise, which I hadn't mentioned with the group before, which is something that we have been postulating with UNESCO, is the utility of going out with a pilot survey, which is something that UNESCO mentioned in their response, to go out, talk to 20 member states, get some feedback on the topology, and then we could, as a study group, consider that, and then the possibility of sending that out to a much broader group, perhaps all member states within UNESCO, so they could provide us feedback. That's a two-stage process. It helps us get the topology right, or at least improve it. It takes longer, and we would therefore need to get moving and get some sort of topology lockdown as soon as possible, but it would also be a more thorough methodology. That is, if we could possibly approach all UNESCO member states, there could be no criticism or comments about which states were chosen and which were not. Rather, it would be a self-selecting exercise where all are invited and anyone that can respond within a reasonable time frame would give us a better field of response. And then, of course, as we get towards the end of that time frame, a couple of rounds of community consultation, beginning probably in Prague, to at least deliver to the broader community what we've come up with. And then as we move into Toronto, a second round of consultation, at least two rounds will be consistent with the methodologies of other study and working groups before we deliver any sort of final report. Now, where we've gotten to so far is this explanation of a topology, and that is to go out to a group, in this case... I'm sorry, who's joined us?
This is Youngham.
Hi, Youngham.
Hi.
This is Paul. We're just working through where we're up to with the group at the moment, and just a brief explanation of where we've been previously and how we're developing the topology.
Okay.
It's basically a tool to help people understand how country and territory names have been used previously. It's not meant to be a definitive list. It could never, even with the engagement of UNESCO, be an absolute list. It's just meant to identify enough categories, enough types, enough ways in which country and territory names have been represented typically within the ICANN sphere, but also in how member states of UNESCO and intergovernmental organisations might understand country and territory names, to give us an idea of the scope of the problem or the situation or the scenario that we're facing. We'd received some commentary on that from UNESCO and then also Heather Forrest, and that means that there are quite a few questions and comments relating to the straw man topology that Bart had circulated. He'd used Netherlands as an exemplar and put together a few categories and entered some responses into that, but that's only a first step. And from there, that's why in later December I'd sort of sent a note out to the list asking whether anyone had any comments or whether they could had any particular criticisms or observations of the straw man topology to date. And the document that I've just sent out to everyone, which we'll talk about in greater length hopefully later on, is a synthesis of the comments that we'd received to date and just some observations, some potentially pointed questions about how we should develop it. Because as with any survey process, the quality of the responses you receive is based upon the quality of the questions that you ask. So we really need to spend a lot of time identifying what sorts of, whether we're talking about official names, historical names, short names, etc., identifying those and describing those as clearly as possible in a UNESCO, in a format that will be digestible in a UNESCO format, to be able to get meaningful responses that's actually going to help our work. So, as you can see, we started with originally ISO 3166-1 Alpha 2 codes, and some UNGGN headings, and some of the other examples, and these were all in Bart's example, short names, simplex versions, names in UN languages, indigenous names, historical names, etc. This is just really a first cut of trying to give people an idea of the sorts of representations of names that we're looking for. Actually, I think I've gone a bit far there, but look, the next step was we would go to UNESCO, and the proposal that we received back from them, and Garda, please step in at any stage if you wish, but the response that was received not only provided some observations and some comments on the headings that were there and where they may be problematic and where they may need a little bit of refinement, but also suggested that it might be methodologically appropriate to go out and survey 20, 25 member states to start with, just to make sure we've got the right sorts of headings, the right sorts of groupings in the topology, to see whether it makes sense for this survey group, and whether the responses we received were meaningful. That would be a relatively quick exercise, something that's quite expeditious, quite effective, so that we can all as a group get some feedback and see where we need to adjust that. It could potentially raise some sensitive issues. How do you select the member states that participate in the survey? And in discussions that we have with MGARDA, it seemed that we could be quite pragmatic about that, and that would be you could divide the 20-25 respondents amongst five regions, and then identify member states that are known to respond in good time. MGARDA, am I representing that correctly?
Yes, that's right. One thing what we discussed was as well, but maybe the working group would like to, if we decide to go for 20-25 countries, we could define as well the major preselection criteria of countries. And one criteria what I proposed during our last discussion was that we select one or two countries per one UN region. So it would be one of the criteria which could be applicable when we approach the member states. we could have other criteria defined by the group, by those countries what we are interested in. So that is one of the elements which could be shared as well, the working group.
Mm. And what I'm trying to be very clear with the group about there is that we're trying to be as methodologically sound as possible, but we'd also like to get responses back as effectively as possible. Effectively, what we're trying to work towards is a two-stage process, that we as a group look at the topology that's been developed, the document that has been sent to everyone, which I'll touch upon shortly, which will try to refine that further, and then once we're all happy, broadly speaking, with some of the headings for the topology, that will be the basis for the survey. That will go out to a few UNESCO members, but it need not be comprehensive nor very... we shouldn't be too laboured in terms of how we select which member states respond, because if we can get a meaningful response from them, we can then refine the process and go out to all member states, and therefore our process can't be criticised for being selective. If we can move rapidly and actually get to a second stage of the process where everyone has the opportunity to respond, that would be a little more representative. I'm just very conscious of having spoken a lot. Does anyone have any questions about where we're going to, where we're headed with the topology, or what the purpose of it is, or what the intention of our work is at this stage?
Well, it's Annabeth here.
Go ahead.
One question. We had the final in the end of 2012, after the Ottawa meeting. No, the Toronto meeting.
Yes.
So then the result of the study group should be delivered to the CCNSO, to the council. Am I right
that's
on that? Correct. Yes.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, and they should decide whether it should be established a working group going further on the work we have started out.
That is correct. Now, that means that we both...
if you say that second round of the new GTLDs in the best, or it could be in the end of 2013, and as the applicant guidebook today is saying a kind of an opt-out for or a special solution for the country and territory names, they have to change that. So, and if the council should decide that we should establish a working group to go further on with this work,
mm-hmm.
They have to. When do they need to decide it?
When does the council need to decide that there will be another working group, or when does the working group need to deliver its results?
Yeah, but because if the study group delivers their report in the end of 2012,
yes.
And possible it will be a new round of new GTLDs in the beginning of 2013, then we need to either say that we can't do anything, so they have to, I can make their own rules, or we have to find a suggestion for having them out of the second round as well, while the working group give their recommendation.
That may well be an outcome of this study group. One of the recommendations, not that we're issuing recommendations, but one of the findings of the study group may well be that... country and territory names could be excluded from the second round, but based on a far more broader and well-established evidentiary base than it was for the first round.
Yes,
the first round was largely based, of course, on the objection of governments and others, etc.,
yeah.
And that this had not been well thought out. I'm conscious of both the need to get this moving and the timing, but if this study group were to come back with a vast range of questions regarding country and territory names, which we do not have to provide the answers for, and it also comes back with the imprimatur of UNESCO and a survey of their member states, the involvement of ISO, etc., then that would carry far more weight in terms of the validity of asking for an extension or for an exclusion for the second round. It's much like developing a policy process for IDNs. It's not something that could necessarily happen within 6 months or less, as much as we might all like it to. and I will try and keep it moving as quickly as we can, and hopefully timeframes will be kept as tight as possible. But it's a shame this was not started sooner, but it has been, and it is entirely possible that the outcome of this study group would be something that may be a strong recommendation to the CCNSO Council that further work needs to be done, and therefore the country and territory names should be excluded from the second round. On the other hand, I don't know what we're going to find, and I shouldn't preempt that as an outcome, because there would be many stakeholders that would feel otherwise. So I hope you understand the bureaucracy of my response, but we don't know what we'll find until we do, but we're aiming as reasonably as we can for the end of this year, and we'll see how we go.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. But the main thing then would be to keep contact with ICANN as well, so that they don't develop a new solution for country and territory names in a revised applicant guidebook for the next round.
Well, of course, and the advantage that we have is that this group is genuinely cross-constituency, and though I may occasionally use the term only a study group, that also grants us a certain degree of liberty and scope to cover any range of issues within our mission statement, but it allows us to be quite open and to raise issues and questions without necessarily having to provide answers. But we do have engagement from across the ICANN community, so yes, it would certainly be my intent that we would keep ICANN briefed on what we're doing, and I dare I suggest at their peril to not consider what this group's working on. That's why it's also imperative on all of us to be as comprehensive in this work as possible, because we know that country and territory names can be potentially problematic, and the whole idea is we're spending 12 months finding out exactly why and in what ways, and a range of examples which may or may not fall within the policy scope that we've had previously, and hopefully will fall within policy frameworks that we develop in the future. Early days, but that's the best answer I can give at this stage.
No, I think that's a good answer.
Excellent. Now, as I said, look, the whole idea of the UNESCO survey, and I'd broadly covered all of that already, was the purpose of a preliminary survey is to test the topology. It should always be considered by everyone here and outside of the group as a pilot, as a test. That's why it cannot possibly go out to all member states at once. That is, as Mgada would reaffirm, that's a very broad, difficult exercise, and also to guarantee 100% response rate from all member states is an incredibly onerous effort. But to go out to a few who are selected across a range of across regions, but also based on a knowledge that they are very responsive and they'll get back to us in good time, is a good first sample size. And then to go out to all member states avoids certain sensitivities in terms of who has been asked and who has not, and that they can then self-select as to how they reply. But then, of course, as anyone who's been involved in intergovernmental exercises in the past would acknowledge, it takes a really long time, often to go to capitals, identify the correct agencies that need to provide responses and get back. It may slow our progress, but as I'd mentioned on a previous slide, we can start talking, we can start deliberating on our preliminary ideas while this work is out there. But I really wanted to concentrate on the UNESCO work as something that we need to help scope, narrow down, identify, and get moving as soon as possible. Bart just added this other slide in here about the possibility of collecting data from other sources. There are a number that are out there publicly available, starting with ISO 3166 and others. But because we're undertaking study work, we're trying to scope the best we can evidence that's out there, material that's out there to date, it might also be prudent for us to identify all of those sources and sort of put them into a database as we move forward to see what we can find. Bart, did you want to talk to that at all, or was it just fine for a quick overview like that?
it's fine for a quick overview. Say this is, I think we should start focusing on the typology first. But this is just to mention and say there are sources out there and they're noteworthy and complete, but it's good to note.
All right, thank you. And as the slide says, the next steps for where we go from here, collectively review the topology, suggest appropriate headings, get this moving online as soon as we can, get UNESCO moving on their work that they'd kindly agreed to participate in, and then develop some materials from that that will help start briefing the community, because there's certainly a great degree, as near as I can tell, not concern, but possibly misunderstanding of what this group is doing and what its goals and intentions are. And we need to start briefing everyone on that as soon as we can. Bart, does that now take us and Christina to some of the details on the paper about the topology?
Yeah. Christina, could you upload it?
While this is being uploaded, I'll just explain that this is something that's just been developed in the last couple of days, and it was not meant to be something that would that everyone needs to consider right now, but it's a thought piece, and this is something that I wanted everyone to take away over the next couple of weeks and provide some commentary on. We're back to front. Excellent. Hopefully everyone's received this, and if not, it will be on the Confluence page shortly, or if it's not already. But this is just something that synthesizes the comments that we've received today. It covers what I'd said in the background about we talked about the utility of topology. Bart had sent an example around that he'd worked on as a straw man with the Netherlands as an example. And we'd communicated to UNESCO, asked for comments. Now what we're doing is trying to work out precisely what we wish to put in the topology. So these are the questions, these are the headings, possibly with explanations behind them, that we might send out to UNESCO member states. We would ask them for their views on all of these, and the quality of what we receive back will be based largely upon the quality of what we ask them. And the first heading that we talked about was how you use ISO 3166-1, specifically that Bart had talked about Alpha 2 codes.nl as the example, and some of the commentary we received back also talked about other short versions or abbreviations such as .usa that may not be captured in that. But then .usa would be captured in Alpha 3 codes. You can see that within this document, and all I want to do was briefly present to everyone to think about some of the questions that are proposed and provide their comments online, but we could obviously ask about Alpha 2 and then Alpha 3 codes, but are there other fields? Can anyone think of other fields that should be added that we could perhaps add as a heading of short versions of abbreviations of country and territory names? The next heading was official names of countries, and one question raised was how could these be substantiated? Would a response that comes back need to have the imprimatur of or the authority based on some domestic law or something based on something in the UN or another international body? At this stage, what I'm very conscious of is us not getting so worried about the substantiation of claims. This will never be an authoritative list. It would be ideal if we received responses that said, well, we use this particular name and this is the official name based upon X, which that source will provide us a degree of authority to cover in our final report. But what we're looking for is a whole scope of representations, and that's what would be the most important thing. Just because people, certain member states might put their hands up, then to make certain claims that need not be authoritative for our work. And I'm sorry, there was just a message from you up there. I'd be very happy for you to explain as to how ISO get their names.
Yeah, well, I make it very short, and the idea is that the names are there are actually two ways how they get there, and when the country is an UN member, the names actually come directly from the representative at UN in New York. So, and that's also when the name changes. So the ambassador at the UN tells UN the name of Bolivia changed into something else. Actually, last week Hungary changed its name. And and that is then taken over by the... that's put in the United Nations Terminology Database, UNTERM, and that is what the ISO then will use in its list. So, and that's the most normal way how that happens. When it's not a full UN member, but it's a territory or a dependency, then it often comes via, the country which actually takes care of it. For instance, the Howe and McDonald's Islands have been being taken care of by Australia, if I'm not, and they are actually being called the names, things like that. And
God, HM, we stake claim to that.
Yeah, right. So that's that's basically how these names are. So in the end, they come from the countries themselves most of the time. I mean, there are sometimes problems about the names. An example is, for instance, Taiwan. And since they are not a UN member, and there is some smart conflict between China and the island itself, it's difficult to find the name, what the real name is. However, if you look closely in the UN terminology database, its official name is Taiwan, Province of China. So that's why the ISO is using that.
Sorry, go ahead.
And both names are as well in English as in France, normally.
I think what I'm getting at, I certainly observe the sensitivities around that there are any number of politically sensitive names that we could come up with at the moment, recently, currently, and some potentially in the near future. For the purpose of this study group, it would almost be acceptable to identify that in our final report a separate chapter about changing or sensitive names. I won't go into it in too much detail at the moment, but certainly, look, thank you for the explanation about ISO and how the names are derived there. One would hope that category would be potentially the least contentious of any that we then work into after this, but I'm sure there's a potential contention there anyway. But sorry, go ahead.
And it's not, the process is still going on of recognition in UN, so how ISO deals in this case? Is this a question?
Sorry, that was a question about, I missed half of that.
The question was, for example, UNESCO has a new member state, which was recognized last year. And this is I'm speaking about Palestine. And as we know, still the process of recognition at UN, it takes some time. So in this case, how ISO deals in this specific case?
Palestine, it actually came up again, and it's one of the contentious names. Palestine, which is the official name for you, is Palestine Authority, Occupied, according to, if I remember correctly. They got a name because the M49 list, which is a list of UN list for economic for statistics, and basically when countries territories appear on that list, they ask the ISO to come up with the codes and also with names with that, and this name is taken from the UN the UNTERM database, and that's where it says basically if you look at the UNTERM .org database and look up for Palestine, you find the Palestinian Authority occupied as the country name.
Okay, thank you.
So that's how ISO got it. And I think that is, on the moment, it comes from more documentation. If you grind through the database, you find other stuff as well. And what I vaguely remember is that this was the name used in the UN after the Oslo Accords.
Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I mean, that's as far as I know, but that's how the UNTERM comes from it. They go this way, so ISO takes it over.
I think, again, this gets down to a very specific discussion that we'll need to have at some stage about, I don't know how to broadly group them as a contentious, new, changing, et cetera, names, which I think collectively the study group could identify as an issue that should be considered. But then again, we're far from being in a position to identify a response. But having UNESCO participating and a representative of ISO, just being able to share perspectives will assist us in informing us in having being able to list out some of these complexities. We're not supposed to provide a response, and we could end up spending the vast majority of our time delving into those. But I hope it would end up being sufficient for us to just identify those as issues as a chapter or a particular issue and leave it at that. We'll only know as we progress our work. Now, I just wanted to move on, conscious that we've probably only got around about 15 minutes left. I just wanted to cover off on a few... Chris, it's Maintenance Agency. I just wanted to cover off on a few of the other headings here briefly. One of the most complex issues that I wanted to get into was at the top of the next page. We can cover official languages, and even that can be a little bit difficult to identify, or administrative languages for particular territories. But how do we then get to the next step and cover non-officially recognised languages? That is, and the example I gave there, the name of a particular country or territory in a language other than its official one. Poland in German or English, for that matter, or French, none of which are official languages there. But how would you cover all of those? And I have no doubt that the government of that country would have certain concern about representations of that country name in new GTLDs or whatever it may be. It's an incredibly complicated exercise, and it becomes how long is a piece of string? How could you go out to a member state of UNESCO and say, what are all of the representations of your language of your country name, but not in your language. And that could be incredibly complex. I think I summarized it at the end of this document by saying perhaps the heading could be examples of. We're not asking them to be comprehensive, but they could provide examples. And something that we discussed was, would it be possible that if you go out to 20 UNESCO member states, if the 20 are made aware of who the other 19 are, could they possibly provide in their language, in the official name and the short name or any common usage name, of the other countries that are as part of that survey? We need to scope it somehow. We need to limit it somehow. And that way we could ask them to say, well, how would you represent the other those other countries?
Paul?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Martin has his hands up. He wants to ask, he wants to raise a question.
Please, go ahead, Martin.
Thanks, Paul and Bart, my apologies for arriving late on this call. For me, actually, this one is quite an important issue because all those other languages are going to be going to include the languages that use other scripts other than English. And it seems to me that, certainly I would have a bit of a concern if, for example, there was not some way of preventing country ABC that uses, shall we say, Chinese as a script, registering the United Kingdom in that under that script, and then blocking any ability to get the IBN for the country's relevance. And, in England, the United Kingdom doesn't actually have many languages. In fact, we don't have an official language. And we certainly don't have any language that uses a script other than the Latin script. But it does seem to me that we have to be very careful on this one. You say that it actually gets very long and complicated to try and do, and I like your approach that you would go through and try and do the comparison over the 20 languages of the trial set. I think when we've sort of gone through this before, you've made mention about the idea of, well, what we're really doing is looking for a methodology whereby you can validate a claim that a country is making to have that particular string. I'm just putting my hand up and saying, this is for me actually a very, very important issue. And I don't bring solutions, but wonder whether actually the only solution is to do some sort of validation process.
And I completely agree. And if you've read through that particular section of the text, I think I might have used the word complex about 12 times, because this is where we are getting into incredibly complex territory. For example, if we were to go to your government, Martin, and then also if the Chinese were approached, you may well end up getting the very precise answer to the question that you're asking. Although, given it's an informal UNESCO survey process, it carries no particular weight, you may not get the answer to that the question that you're looking for. I think we're just trying to identify at this stage how complicated this might be. And the more effort that we can devote to this, the better, because that may go towards allaying your concerns. There will be no comprehensive database, unfortunately, that comes out of this exercise that covers all representations of the holy grail of all representations of country and territory names in all languages and scripts. That is simply not going to happen. Given if we can be as thorough as we can be, hopefully that will go some way to addressing the issue. or at least informing the unfortunate working group that may be tasked with coming up with more recommendations and solutions. I noticed Annabeth had a hand up and a question.
Just a comment. So I agree on the complexity here, but it's a very important question. And what we do in this exercise in the study group, in my view, is to establish what it is, the complexity, what is the theater name, how far should we go. We are not in this group have a mandate to decide what to do with them. So who shall have them, and that will be a question for later, if I have understood this right.
That's right, and there's a note there, and I'm sorry that my if I've given everyone vertigo as I'm trying to scroll through, but my mouse had locked in. But this is a trial topology, and that's what I've said. We're a study group, and our findings aren't binding. The comment there was particularly about substantiation and how does someone substantiate whether this is official within local law or through the UN or other international bodies. That comment applies for the overall work of the group as well. We're just trying to identify the scope of the problem, not provide solutions to the issues. The more problems that people come up with, that's not actually going to frustrate us. That's going to make our work all the more sound. A report from us that says here's 200 examples of potential problems is all the better a result than one that says here's 10 problems. That actually shows that we've been diligent in our work and identified as many issues as possible. But Annabeth, I agree with you completely. We're not trying to provide that solution, nor can we. But that also gets back to your issue or possible frustration about the pace at which we work. Because, yes, we will only at the end of this year, come out with the issues all identified. Now, that may well be enough to inform another working group, but that takes another certain length of time. But I certainly agree with you that that is the scope of our work, to identify the issues, not to resolve them.
Yeah.
So what and again, I will now move rather quickly through the document. There were a series of headings where we talked about the official names, the listing of names under ISO 3166-1, primary and simplex names. So my local example would be official name Commonwealth of Australia. Primary and simplex name would be Australia. Netherlands in the example that Bart had provided. Again, you know, do they differ and would it be in all official languages? And then it led to the question, feedback that we got about historical names, and I realised that this is going to be of incredible sensitivity for many countries and territories, particularly regarding entities that no longer exist. But I'm conscious that we're talking about the here and now and the use of current country and territory names. I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't delve into historical names. It's going to be very important, and particularly those that historical names that still represent regions, etc., or states within countries. But we have to draw a line somewhere in terms of how we refer to historical names. We can tie ourselves in knots going back 100 years, one war, two wars, possibly three wars, 100 years, 500 years, and it's going to become incredibly complicated, and we can all write a thesis on it, but I suspect of most relevance will be current country and territory names, with the opportunity for respondents to our survey and respondents to the topology to identify historical names with relatively open boundaries as to what they self-identify as important as historical names. So that was another heading that we had covered. I didn't want to go into that in too much detail. But that was that one. And then there was also sort of local names that could become potentially confused. So, sorry, was there a question? Anna, but did you have a question, or was your hand still up from before?
No, no, sorry. It's Celia from the last time.
so anyway, I'll
take it down again.
I don't want to work through all the headings, but there are a few questions there, and minority names can be potentially difficult again. What I wanted to convey, and my page doesn't want to scroll through properly, but what I wanted to convey was that it would be very, very useful for everyone to work through this document that I'd circulated to the group in the last 24 hours. And please especially read through the italicized text, which raises questions. It's not a position that we're trying to press through. It's just questions that we have about how should we think about this? What sort of questions should we be asking of you, asking UNESCO to go out to their member states with? We're conducting a survey, and the saying we have in Australia is garbage in, garbage out. If you're not precise in the material that you, in the questions that you ask, then you can't rely on getting great responses back. We need to be quite clear and hopefully have questions and categories that go out that translate to other languages readily and aren't necessarily complicated. We're not going to capture everything, but what I'd really love everyone to do is to have a good read of this document and make some comments about, provide feedback online through the mailing list. Probably no later than about the 10th of February. We've got our next conference call scheduled for the 20th, and I realise everyone's only starting to read through this document now. Very happy to have an exchange via the email list. But if people could think about some of the questions that have been raised there, with the aim of us and the Secretariat sort of compiling a summary and having another version ready to go before our 20th of February call, that would be wonderful. But we'd probably need about a week or so before that. So if I could sort of set the 10th of February as a deadline for comments on this, really what we're looking at now is let's get a document together that will make good sense for UNESCO, and we will continue to talk with MGATA. This will continue to be an iterative process to develop something that could go out as a meaningful survey to a selection of member states in as near future as possible, so that we can start getting responses back from them. We're all talking in the theoretical at the moment. We're talking about, well, we don't know what we're going to get back. This is where we'd love to see examples. We've thrown a few of them in this document in various scripts and languages, but it would be great to start getting some materials back. And if they're of any use or they could be more useful, we all need to refine that and start facing some draft papers and some ideas about where we might start going with the group. But we really need to get this moving. So I'm conscious that we're sort of very close to the hour mark. Was there anyone that had any questions or comments at this stage that they wanted to share before we signed off? All right. That being the case, I'll send a note out to everyone tomorrow just to briefly summarise what we've discussed today, but really just to say, please read through that topology document that we've got up there at the moment. Consider some of those questions. And the ultimate would be if everyone came back and said, this is what I would like to see as the list of headings. But a number of months ago, developed a straw man. What would others like to see as potential headings? Be quite bold with that. And if they had any particular questions or they were uncertain, please do share them with the group. That will help us develop something that we can get to UNESCO as soon as possible. We're certainly aiming for by the time of the Costa Rica meeting, but let's see how we go with time frame. If there were no further questions or comments, I might wrap it up there. Excellent. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.